Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
As I thought about this talk for Mother's Day, a lot of maternal ideas came and went because I've given probably 20-some Mother's Day talks through the years, and you always try to take a little different perspective, but I didn't want to make it just a schmaltzy talk about a mother's love, though a mother's love is truly a wonderful thing, and I didn't want to make it another standard healing talk about how you need to get over what your mother did to you when you were 6 years old, though some people need that too. I used to think that my mother was the only mother in the world who made her kids crazy, but as I got older and I talked to a number of my friends on the subject, I came to a great metaphysical realization. I didn't realize that's what it was at the time, but it was, and that is there is only one mom, and we've all got her, okay? And some of you are her, too, okay? How many moms do we have in the audience? Okay, great, a bunch, terrific. God bless every one of you, please. There's a story I love about three mothers who were bragging about their sons. They were down in Miami, and they were arguing about which of their sons was the most devoted to his mom. And one of them said, "My son just bought me a brand new Cadillac." The other said, "Okay." And the second one said, "My son just sent me on a 2-week cruise to the Mediterranean and paid for the entire thing." And they all said, but the third one kind of laughed and said, "That's absolutely nothing. My son goes to the most expensive psychotherapist in the city twice a week, and all he talks about is me." So, you know, so our mothers like to talk about us, but we also all like to talk about our mothers, though fortunately most of us do not have to do it in therapy. So no matter what your opinion is on the subject of mothers and their children, and there's a whole range of people, I have had all sorts of responses to Mother's Day talks, we're all well aware that there's a very special relationship between every mother and each and every one of their children. And we may all have different feelings about our relationship with our mother, whether she's still with us or not, but those feelings, whatever form they take, are never wishy-washy. They're very, very definite. If you ask somebody about their mom, they will tell you exactly what they think. Now, those feelings are also sometimes fairly complicated, which is not that surprising when you remember that we all started our lives being completely dependent upon this one other human being. Now, eventually we left the nest, at least most of us have, but the residual emotions that we had while we were growing up still remain. They are all in there somewhere, and that's the part that can be a little interesting. That's the best word I could come up with. You see, assuming that we are all now 100% completely independent adults, and I'll make that assumption for argument's sake, that transition from complete dependence to relative independence can be very, very tricky. Because we can never get away from the indisputable fact that our mothers, as they frequently remind us, either directly or indirectly, that our mothers carried us for 9 months, and we should appreciate it, okay? We should owe them, okay? They may not say it out loud, but that's what they're thinking, all right? And those of you who are mothers know that I'm right, right? It's a little tucked in back there someplace, but it's there. You see, the truth is, how many people here have been involved with a pregnancy all the way through? Okay, interesting. Trick question, right? The truth is, every single person in this room has been involved in an entire pregnancy from conception to birth. Now, you may not remember it very well, okay, but you were there. In fact, we have all been through the entire process at least once, from the doctor's diagnosis to morning sickness to mom's disappearing waistline and raging hormones, and finally getting pushed and dragged, kicking and screaming out of a nice warm womb into an ice cold room. We may not remember it, but every single one of us did that. The difference between our experience and the experience of a real live mother is she's been through it at least twice, and she's seen it from both sides, right? Okay? I mean, in the most literal sense of the word, that's what a mother is, a woman who gave birth to a child. Now, what goes on after that is really what makes a mother, but that's what it is. And we know, because it is a biological imperative, if you want to call it that, of the human species, or a law of nature, if you want to call it that, that every mother goes through a fairly specific series of events that result in her child being born. So spiritually speaking, which I like to kind of emphasize here on Sunday morning, childbirth is a visible demonstration of cause and effect in its most dramatic human form. And what that means is, no matter who we are now, we all started out as an idea. Now, we may not have been an intentional idea. We may not even have been a good idea. In some cases, okay, I know some people like that. But we all started out that way. And if we look at it this way, we can see that there's an intelligence at work during the entire cycle of birth at a very fundamental level. In fact, on a level even deeper than all the physical and emotional and mental changes that the mother-to-be is going through. Now, whether you want to call this process intelligence, whether you want to call it the genetic code, whether you want to call it human biology, there is a wisdom within the consciousness of every mother that knows exactly what to do to create an environment where the child within her can grow and develop. And that wisdom is not in her conscious mind, and it's not something she can turn on or off at will. Okay? Over a given period of 9 months for a human being, though I have been assured by mothers I know that it seems much longer than 9 months, without any conscious action on her part, we talked about this a couple weeks ago in the health and healing talk, the mother's body changes and adapts as this thing inside of her grows from the size of a pinhead into a fully formed human infant. So every mother, once the process starts, her body begins to broaden a little like this, and it starts to expand a little, going out like that, all perfectly natural. A friend of mine a number of years ago said the first thing she did when she found out she was pregnant was to take a snapshot of her waistline, because after seeing her friend, she thought she'd never see it again, which I thought was kind of cute anyway. So body chemistry and hormones and all that start to change. Almost immediately, parts of the body that had different functions now start to give orders to every other part of the body. And all of this happens just because two little cells, one from each parent, started dancing a little too close together, and the process began. Now, kind of tongue-in-cheek with some of that, but before I go too much farther with this biology aspect, I'd like to point out something that kind of forms the basis for my talk today. The image of a woman carrying a child to term, if you think about it, is a picture-perfect physical analogy of something that we do many, many times during our lives. And I'm referring to the way we give birth to ideas in our life that change the way we live. I mean, if you think about it, children and ideas have a lot in common. Every single child is a God-given creative idea presented to the whole human race, and one child, any one child born anywhere to anyone, has the potential to completely change the world as we know it. One child, one being starting out from two cells, like Jesus or Einstein or Gandhi or Dr. King or Hitler or Stalin on the other side if things go wrong, all right, just to name a few. Children are also an important part of the evolution of every community, including this one. Every single child is what we might call a divine, precious idea, freshly created and open to an incredible future with no limitations, because they haven't been exposed yet to the limitations that are thrust upon them by a world that sometimes confuses innocence with ignorance. Big mistake, all right? Now, you or I may not have been raised that way. I do not feel I was raised as a divine idea, okay? And probably not a whole lot of you were. But the potential was always there. And even though it may be a little late for us to change our childhood, we can still have a profound effect on our kids. And by our kids, I don't just mean our own individual children. I mean every child everywhere. In fact, that's why in a couple months now, or about a month and a half, we're sending a group of our teens to the CSL, Centers for Spiritual Living, teen camp out in California. We do that every year. I think we sent 8 or 10 last year. As much as we can, we need to create an environment where these kids are encouraged to develop and appreciate their own unique abilities, okay, and their own connection with spirit. I want this center to be one that does that for our kids. Now, you don't see the kids on Sunday morning. Some churches and centers bring the kids out at the end and show them off, and it's so cute, and everybody claps. I think they got their hands full in there learning what they need to learn, and we got our hands full in here learning what we need to learn because we didn't get raised that way. That's kind of the way the process goes. Whether or not we had children of our own, okay, I think we all wish that we had grown up with this kind of spiritual support. Because that's what our youth volunteers are doing right this very minute, right down the hall, out to the left, okay? And we need to be open to these children, because if we can't be open to divine ideas as expressed by these beautiful children with their awkward little bodies and their little smiles and their beautiful eyes and all that kind of thing, if we can't be open to that kind of an actual physical manifestation of an idea, how open are we going to be to these little ideas that wander into our mind, a little bit shy, a little bit uncertain, looking for a place to grow? The truth is, if you look at the way this teaching goes in terms of creativity, we need to be open to anything in our life that is fresh and new and has the potential to become something great. And good ideas and children both come under this category. Now, a mother knows this. Intuitively, right in the deepest part of our heart, because it comes with the territory. And we can't all be mothers of children, and we may not want to be mothers of children, even if we could. But we can all use this example to become better vehicles for the creative process in our life and giving birth to greater ideas of all kinds that are going to be there to support us going forward. So let me talk for a few minutes about ideas, because they're very important in this teaching, all right? And how we can be more active and capable in bringing those ideas from their source, wherever that happens to be, into our daily life, all right? Now, this works the same for big ideas as it does for little ideas, because it's all the same process. But let's focus on the big ideas first. Because not following up on our big ideas is what causes the difference in our life. And when we do follow up, the results are easier to see. And I'm talking about everyday big ideas like building your own business, about deciding to quit a job you've been in for a long time and taking a risk, about deciding to retire, about deciding to get into a committed relationship, or deciding to get out of a relationship that no longer serves you. Those are all big ideas. They're forks in the road. They're turning points in our life. Ideas that allow us to heal some sort of a life-threatening illness instead of simply giving ourselves up to the disease. Those kinds of ideas are important. So first, let me ask you this. This is a rhetorical question. You don't have to shout out an answer. Okay. Where do ideas come from? Pretty straightforward question, right? Where do they actually come from? I mean, if we want to come up with bold new ideas to replace worn-out situations or to face challenges in our life, we ought to at least know where we get them, where these ideas come from, right? I want to know where they are, okay? We all have a constant need for new and better ideas in our life, but where do we go to find them, or how do we go about attracting them? That's a question we need to learn how to answer. So let me give you a hint. Ideas come from the same place that babies come from. Okay? There's your hint. But where's that? They certainly don't come from somewhere in the body. I mean, ideas don't come from our brain any more than a baby comes from mommy's tummy or wherever. Okay? Those are the organs they come through, but that's not where they originate. That's not where they originate. Okay? Where were these ideas before they came into the mental and physical world where we start to do something with us? And the answer is deceptively easy. Babies and ideas both come from where? Who knows? They come from God. They come from God, okay? And when I say God, I don't mean somebody sent us a telegram down from heaven so we'd have an idea, okay? I'm talking about the one intelligence, the one mind, the source of everything that exists. And it all starts with an idea, all right? They couldn't possibly come from anywhere else, which means any idea we need to address any situation we're dealing with is ready for us now as soon as we are ready for it. As soon as we open ourselves to the source, all right? However, here's the hard part. We can know the idea is ready for us and still have trouble attracting it. Just like a woman could know what makes babies but have trouble getting pregnant. It's basically the same thing. In bringing forth the seed of an idea, we create sort of a writer's block, All right, that's really what the definition of writer's block is. And we do this when we're trying to force something to happen. Do you ever have somebody turn to you and say, tell me a joke right now and make it a good one? You know, your brain goes blank. Bob, you've run into that situation, okay? You can't think of one, even though you know a whole bunch of different jokes, okay? Your brain immediately stops working. You can't force an idea because ideas don't react well to coercion, okay? They have kind of an independent streak that hates to be told when to show up. Any cat owners out there? I happen to be. When does your cat show up? When your cat feels like it, okay? You know? They show up on their terms, not yours. That's what ideas do. But if we create an environment in our mind that is attractive to new ideas, that welcomes them and supports them and gives them nourishment, if we create that kind of a consciousness all the time, we will be amazed how ideas are going to start showing up and hanging around. Okay? They will do it quickly and easily. Now, ideas can come in a variety of different ways. For example, the initial seed of an idea is more likely to come from an exciting, passionate, unexpected adventure than it is from a boring, routine encounter. That's where I talked about last week that people were asleep. When you keep doing the same stuff keeps going around your mind. So a new idea is more likely to show up when we go somewhere incredible, when we try something amazing, okay, or when we meet people who stretch our imagination far beyond what we knew before. Let me tell you a story, quick story. I had a friend years ago when I was living down in Florida, and she was a lawyer. She had gone to a small Florida college and was working for a small law firm. Not a real exciting life. She was a very nice young woman. She had a little house and a dog and a few friends and did kind of the same stuff. But one day she decided on a whim. She was probably in her early 30s and had never been out of the state of Florida. And she saw a flyer, this is before the internet, okay, at her office. And it was talking about an American Bar Association, an ABA convention in San Francisco. So she said, I'm going to go. I've never been out of Florida, okay. And she went. And she returned and said, oh, my God. Her eyes were that big, okay? She says, do you know what that city's like? And I said, nobody doesn't like San Francisco, okay? But she went a little farther than that. That idea was planted in her brain. Within a week, she had put her house up for sale and sold it within a month. She quit her job immediately. She sold all her stuff, and she moved to San Francisco. And she rented an apartment that had sort of a peripheral view, the Golden Gate Bridge down there, and got a job with a law firm there. And the last time I visited her, which was probably 25 or 30 years ago, it was in her office on the 32nd floor of the Transamerica building, overlooking the entire city, if you've been out there, as I know most of you have, and she could walk to work. How cool is that? Okay? Now, she didn't plan all that. 6 months earlier, she probably couldn't find San Francisco on a map, okay? Probably couldn't. But there was something inside of her. There was a wisdom that knew when she saw something that she needed to break out from where she was. And when she went there and saw it, she knew what it was. And she knew that it resonated with her. And she listened to it without letting her fear get in the way. So she didn't force that to happen. She allowed it to happen. She allowed it to happen. Now, at the other extreme, we can also use careful planning to expose ourselves to new ideas. That's what we do when we're in school, though we don't realize it when we're young. That's what you do when you show up here on Sunday to hear a talk. You know what the title is, but you're exposing yourself to new ideas. That's what you do when you go to training of any kind, when you read specific books related to a certain topic or listen to people's ideas at seminars regarding something that we're working on, whatever, ideas that we can use and adapt. That's kind of the equivalent of family planning in terms of ideas, okay? We organize everything based on schedule and all this other stuff in order to make sure that we don't get any ideas that will drastically change our life when we're not ready to change our life. That's kind of what we do. Now, that's a very disciplined approach. Some people are better at it than others, and it works fine as long as we don't get too carried away with trying to control when and how everything is going to happen. Because sometimes ideas show up in spite of our planning, and they don't look anything like we thought they were going to look. They don't, okay? So sometimes we try so hard to keep ourselves from being exposed to new ideas to try and prevent our life from being knocked off balance that when an unexpected or potentially disruptive idea sneaks in underneath, through the back door, whatever it happens to be, and it plants itself firmly in our consciousness, it's almost like an unexpected pregnancy. Oh God, the idea is here. What do I do with it now? Because it's very hard to unremember something, okay? I mean, there we are. We're sitting fat, dumb, and happy. Picture this. In a job that we've been in for a while that pays all right, you know, and it's got good benefits. We've got a little bit of seniority. And suddenly the guy in the cubicle next to us, who's been there for 3 years and we barely talk to him at all, he walks in and says, I just gave him my 2 weeks' notice. I found a place that pays me twice as much and it's twice as fun. See ya. And he walks out the door. Now, very few of us would go, huh, isn't that nice, and just go back to doing whatever we're doing. Okay, when that idea gets planted, most of us, I know I would, start to think. We start to think. And we may not have control over where that thought goes. Or here's a little more simple thing. Let's say you're perfectly happy with your 5-year-old Toyota Corolla with cloth seats. It's paid for, runs really well. And then a friend of yours says, look, I'm leaving town for a month. I'd like you to take care of my 6 Series BMW. Okay? Once you get that smell of leather, it's hard to go back. It's hard to go back, okay? You see, just like babies, ideas have a tendency to show up at the most unexpected time, planting themselves right in the middle of our life, and we become potential caretakers or potential mothers by default. And when we do that, that's why we have to have our wisdom open to new ideas, because that's when our wisdom in here can tell us whether that idea is something that we should pursue or something we should set aside for later. That's what that wisdom would tell us. Of course, sometimes ideas come at a perfect time when you're surrounded by friends, everything's nice and stable, you can take advantage of them, all that stuff. When your life is flowing absolutely perfectly and everything you need to do and know to make that idea work just sort of opens itself in front of you. That's a nice deal if you can do it. But all these different ways that ideas show up, it doesn't really matter, because it doesn't matter if the idea you have comes from a textbook or if it was written on the bathroom wall. It really doesn't. As long as it is an idea that resonates with you, once it's in our consciousness, any idea has the divine potential to create opportunities. And the most wonderful thing about it is the same power that was the source of the idea is the power that is the source of making that idea a reality. That's what we have to realize. You see, Bill was talking about this in his talk on change, which I liked. Very, very good. Our lives are filled with transitional moments. Transitional moments. Moments of confusion. Moments of fear, moments of excitement, moments of passion, moments of doubt, and moments of pain. And every one of these moments is, pardon my pun, pregnant with possibility. Every one of these transitional moments. But we have to accept that the idea, once we have it, even if we think it's the perfect idea, it's not going to remain static. It's not just going to sit there. It's going to change like a child. It's going to grow and develop over time. So there might be a little pain or discomfort along the way, because this may be a surprise to some people. Did you know we tend to resist change? Did anybody realize that? We tend to resist change, okay? Even when it's producing something we want. So that's when we need to use this teaching, to use the calming methods that we use in meditation and all of those, to exercise things like patience and faith and trust, knowing that the end result is going to be worth it. We need to recognize that whatever is being created out of the idea that we have given birth to, whatever it is that's being born through us by means of that idea, may be the culmination of the growth of a tiny seed that was planted years before, maybe months before, but long before now. Finally, how do these ideas of ours get from nothing to something, from the invisible to the visible? Okay, that's important to understand. You see, just like an embryo, sort of, an idea starts out very small and very fragile. In the first few weeks of a new idea, it is susceptible to all sorts of things that can squash it like a bug or allow it to grow and to blossom. And the most important factor of all, of course, is the environment. Just like the mother's body is the environment for a child, our consciousness is the environment for the idea. So what we do to build that environment is important. They talk about a mother, the music she listens to, the emotions she has while she's carrying the child, all those different things, the movies she watches. All of these things affect the child because they affect her consciousness. It's the same thing with ideas. Obviously, a healthy consciousness is more likely to have healthy ideas that have a better chance of succeeding in the world. Now, that's the physical environment. The mental and emotional environment is the same way. When we first get an idea and we automatically squash it, let it go, that's a certain environment in our consciousness. If we hang around negative people who don't want us to change because they're afraid of change, that is a certain kind of consciousness. All right? When we stay in a job that is killing our soul, when we're angry all the time, those things will affect the ideas just like a mother's body affects a child. We have to understand that there's a principle at work here, okay? An idea grows from the life force around it and within it, all right? So we're not the power that makes the idea grow. That's God's job. But we are the power, the individual expression of that power, that can cause that idea to be nurtured and to grow into something greater than we ever imagined. And certainly something greater than it was when it began, all right? You see, it's easy to protect an idea when it's in your head. You can rationalize it and all that stuff. But once it's out in the physical world, you start to take some actions and it starts taking up space, that's when the fear comes in. And our fear is that the idea can be threatened by the problems of the world, by cold, hard facts, by what society calls common sense. But that kind of fear is perfectly normal. The key is, don't give in to it. Don't give in to it. Every new mother is scared to hold her baby in the beginning because she thinks she's going to break it. It's true. And those of you who are mothers knew it. The first time you held that little thing, now the fathers are really afraid, but the mothers are slightly afraid, okay? Mother is afraid when the baby cries the first time she gets it home. She's afraid when the kid starts crawling or walking or running, okay, or riding a bicycle. That's a big one. The mother is petrified when the child gets on the school bus the very first time, but she allows her love to overcome the fear. That's the key. She allows the love and the trust and the faith to overcome the fear. Every mother knows that her child is more than it appears to the world. And we have, all of us have within us, the wisdom to know that there is something that lies beyond the physical appearance of ideas or children. And to know that the ideas that we deliver and attract to ourselves and nurture are a gift of God, and those ideas are the gift that we leave to the world. The ideas that we have will grow into our legacy, just like a child would grow and be the legacy of the parents. And as the years go by and we watch these ideas take on a life of their own, we start to see that we are also greater than we appear to be. Because we are the vehicle for the creativity. We are the vehicle for God creating more of itself in the world, all right? And once we understand that, once we finally get that into our consciousness and allow ourselves to be open to the world, then we understand that this creative power works in our life. Is that my mom calling me for Mother's Day? I'll call her anyway. So anyway, I would like to wish a deep, heartfelt, happy Mother's Day to all of you who are mothers and to all of you who have mothers, okay? And I would like to wish a special happy Mother's Day to my mom, Kitty Gagne, who is 90 years old this year. All right, thank you. All right, and remember, this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is, and so it is. All right. Thank you. Okay, let's take a moment. A lot of ideas here, and all of us are in a different place in terms of our mother, whether she's here or whether she has gone on and made her transition, however we were raised, whatever is in our mind. I know that these ideas hit all of us in a different way. But let's know the greatest truth we can about it. I know that life is a creative process. I know that this energy that created this form that is my body came not just from my mother or from my mother and my father, but came through countless generations going back far into history. Every single one of us is made up of a creative idea that joined with another creative idea to create one more and one more and one more. So we are a sequence in the creative process of life. That life has gone on long before we came, and it will go on long after we leave, but it will never end. And even when we leave this part of life, we will be in another part of life, because spirit is everywhere and everything. So I recognize that as I am in this life, as I look around, I see that everything that exists, everything I can see, touch, taste, and smell, came from a creative idea. Whether it was created by nature, created by human beings, or created by that infinite intelligence that is constantly flowing as life. So my life is a flow, my thoughts are a flow, my body is a flow, my relationships are in flow. All of this is constantly moving and constantly changing, and I have a choice. I have the choice to either sit within that change and take whatever I get, or I can take the seed of an idea and plant that within that flow and allow my surroundings, my life, my present, and my future to become something great. That's the choice I make. The ability to start in this moment, to begin where I am with what I have, which is my mind. And the only power I have is the power to choose in this moment what I think and what I believe. So I give thanks for that power. I give thanks for being able to recognize it. I give thanks for learning how to use it. I give thanks for learning how to trust in it as I go about creating a beautiful life for myself and for every person whose life I touch, whether I meet them or not. That is how we work together, because we are all together the same intelligence, expressing itself in billions of different ways, but every single one of us connected at the level of God, at the level of spirit. So as I know this, I take responsibility for my part in life, and I use my life in the best way I know how. I no longer give any power to fear or anger or hatred. Even seeing those things, I recognize that they do not need to exist. Not in me and not in anyone else. I recognize that this life is a life of love. The greatest power in life is love. So I participate in that as a loving intelligence, a loving creative power, creating love out of love. Knowing this, I accept this truth for myself. I embrace it, and I release it into consciousness, letting it be so from this moment on. Please join me in saying, and so it is.